You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 11 March, the U.S. saw last night the biggest one-day drop since 2022. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Rick Anari from Anchor. U.S. macro data, we got inflation tomorrow, but there's a lot happening at this point in time. We'll dig into some of it with Rico. Bruce Strong from Impact on Results. Sean Kelly looking at market performance, U.S. versus local and other global markets. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Joburg Deeds Office building issued with a prohibitive notice over safety issues. Non-compliance issues have led to staff protests, severely disrupting the lodgement of deeds and property transfers. Business Day, Sunbet boosts Sun International's full-year earnings, and the company also manages to reduce debt by another 500 million ZAR. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 2.7%, NASDAQ off 3.8%. Over in the East, mostly red. Sydney's up a fifth of a percent, Tokyo down 1.8%, Hong Kong off 0.5%, and Tencent down almost a full percent. Commodities, red. Gold futures, 2,901. Brent, 69.27. Platinum, 964. Palladium, 945. The Rand is 18.31. Bitcoin, 79,400. And top 40 opening call, a green open, 25 points, which is what? 0.03%.
MoneyWeb Now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Tony now with Rick Anari. You, of course, find him at Anchor. Rick, I appreciate the early morning time. In the intro there, we've got markets coming under pressure. You've put together, I mean, the short answer is that there is a weaker consumer business confidence in the U.S. We've seen inflation ticking up, and the Atlanta Fed's GDP Now model is signaling potentially a Q1 contraction in the U.S. of 2.4%. There are some concerns out there, I suppose, around the state of the U.S. economy at this point in time.
Yeah, hi, Simon. Thanks for having me this morning. It's always great to be on the show. I think, as you said, you know, the context here is, you know, you've had two very strong years within developed market equities. Stocks have continued to climb even despite the macro headwinds. If you think of the fact that, you know, we had post-pandemic inflation, supply chain disruptions, higher interest rates, but all in the face of this, stocks continue to rise. But now you're seeing markets really face a macro environment and macro headwinds that they can't ignore. And this is mainly in the form of heightened geopolitical uncertainty. And of course, that's coming on the back of, you know, the Trump administration's foreign policy stance. And we're seeing that driving. We've seen that since the beginning of the year drive the increased risk aversion that we're seeing play out. If you think about the fact that, Simon, you know, as of yesterday, U.S. stocks have erased all of their post-election gains.
Yeah.
Seeing investors continue to plow into the, you know, the less risky parts of the market. But as you said in the intro, you know, I think there's at the core of this volatility that we're seeing playing out, there's three main macro factors that I would say are playing out. The one is weaker consumer and business confidence, as you highlighted. The other one is rising inflation. And then, of course, this is all sort of elixir that's coming together around concerns over slower growth. So certainly, Simon, I think those are the three macro concerns that the market is juggling with and really facing as we currently stand.
And it feels wild as an investor to see this happening. I mean, I suspect you're just telling clients, you know, volatility is a feature of markets. It's not a bug. And you know, no knee-jerk reaction. Diverse portfolios and time sort of solve all of these concerns.
Yeah, Simon, I think, you know, look, you have to be honest around, you know, the market pessimism that's currently gripping markets. But as you said, you know, we've got to tell investors to avoid knee-jerk reactions. You know, it's not an all-fall-down situation. You've got parts of the market that are screening very positively. You know, you've also got, you know, the other parts of the markets as far as just emerging markets are concerned that are holding up. If you think about the fact that EMs were up 0.5%, while, you know, DMs in the form of the MSCI MSCI World, or the All Countries, were down between 0.3 to 0.7%. And I think, you know, the case that you made right now for, you know, constructing, you know, well-diversified portfolios, you know, I think on ours, you know, if you think of the fact that on one side you had Apple falling 4% yesterday, while Unilever and, you know, the consumer staples parts of the portfolio was up to 0.6%. So, you know, I think, Simon, you know, now's the time for active management to earn its stripes. You've got stretched valuations within the U.S. You've got shifting macro conditions and geopolitical risks. But yeah, now's the time for active stock picking and active management to really earn its stripes and to find those missed price opportunities and generate the alpha that investors look to active management for.
I take your point on that. Absolutely. A last quick question. I mean, a couple of folks have been saying, oh, tech sold off, time to jump in. I mean, my sense is it's always more to the point you made earlier around having a plan and a strategy rather than a knee-jerk, well, NVIDIA's down at, I don't know, 107. This is cheap. It's always a case of, you know, doing your homework and making sure that you actually understand what you're buying and the valuation you're paying for it.
Yeah, definitely, Simon. I think the valuation is definitely a big factor for us. If you think about like our global macro IRR model that we run, as a stock screen against models, you know, I'll take the like of Novo Nordisk, for example, within Copenhagen and the ADR within the US. You know, we've liked that stock for a while. Yesterday's 8% move negative, you know, that kind of brings it in the right territory for us. You know, you've got whatever, like a 24 percent, you know, risk-adjusted IRR that we're screening with a 15% EPS growth for the next 3 years. So the move downwards yesterday definitely puts it in the right frame for us. We weren't comfortable to pay the premium that we were before, but yeah, now it certainly does put it in the right ballpark for us as investors.
Yep, I take your point. These sort of volatile markets create opportunities, much as they are at times quite scary. Reganari from Anchor, always appreciate the early morning insights. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Bruce Strong, CEO of Impact. Results for the year ending December saw revenue up 3.6%, HEPS down 29.9%, dividend off 12.5%. Bruce, appreciate the time today. Operating margins overall lower. You've had some issues. We'll touch on some of those. I'm thinking your Springs paper mill, for example. But how much is it cost pressure coming through the system as well?
I'd say, to be honest, the cost pressure isn't the main factor in this period. Mm-hmm. The main factor was in one of our major businesses, the paper manufacturing businesses. We have seen prices coming off a little, and that's mainly on the mix because we are exporting more than what we did in the past. Mm-hmm. So that's been one factor. We have had increased costs due to increased demand in certain sectors, but the actual sales didn't materialize. So we carried the costs without the sales, and that inhibited or undermined our profitability. But notwithstanding those headwinds, I must say we did have some good successes in increasing our cash generation to $1.9 billion and reducing our debt to $2.4 billion, which was encouraging.
Yeah, I was going to touch on that. Net debt went down about some 11% lower. I mean, it's a strong-looking balance sheet. To talk about cash generation, it's been good cash generation at the same time.
Yes, so the $1.9 billion is off the previous record of $2 billion, which was the year before. Mm-hmm. But it's still encouraging. A lot of the negative variances on our costs were really non-cash costs. So, you know, that cash flow does show that the business is strong. And then our gearing is down to 28.8%, which is the lowest in the last 4 years and at a comfortable level.
You mentioned the results that you'd started to see an uptick in the economy late in the financial period. Has this continued into the current trading period?
It's been quite weak, actually. You know, we were very optimistic come the last quarter and we did see a bit of an uptick. But as things stand today, it's not evident that there is a huge amount of momentum in the economy at the moment, and we're hoping that that changes in the near future.
I mentioned the Springs paper mill up front, got some production downtime, municipal water and electrical supply issues. Neither of those an easy, quick or cheap fix, I imagine, for the group.
That's true. I mean, and in Springs, for every day we're down, it costs us 2 million rand in contribution. So we have battled in Ekurhuleni generally a number of our operations with both water and electricity supply. Mm-hmm. For example, the most recent bout of load shedding had us suddenly switched off for 4 hours at a time, you know, three times a day, and you can't run a paper mill like that. So we are working with our local authorities to try and improve the situation, and we did make good progress last year, but this latest bout of load shedding came as another surprise, to be honest.
You say you've increased solar-generated power up some 79%. This saves you some 40 million in electricity costs to either Eskom or municipalities. You are working on it. It's just, I mean, it's a process, not an event.
Yes, correct. We've currently got 16 megawatts of solar power, and we're busy adding another. By the end of 2027, we'll have another 10. So that is one way of building operation resilience, and we need to do the same on water. We have done a lot already, but there's still a lot of work to do in that regard.
Water, to me, just intuitively seems a lot of a harder solution to solve.
That's true, because the sun doesn't give you water in South Africa. By its very nature, is water scarce on the one hand. But the most important thing there is the distribution network of, you know, municipalities particularly. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, most of our operations in municipal areas are not big water consumers. And the two paper mills, which do use a fair amount of water, there we abstract our own water and we manage our own water supply and discharge, so we're not affected by municipal failures.
Okay. You're doing a large upgrade at one of the paper mills. There's been some challenges. You talk about rain and other things that have sort of got in the way, but you're still on track for around about a mid-year go live.
Yes, that's right. So that's at our Mkondo paper mill, which is in southeastern Mpumalanga. It's a 1.3 billion rand upgrade, and that produced more virgin grade paper containerboard, and a very exciting project. Yeah, there have been some construction challenges due to, at one stage we thought we had a drought, and soon after we had 3 months of rain uninterrupted, including a tornado. But that's not an excuse. I mean, at the end of the day, our colleagues and teams there have really put in a big effort to try and deliver the project at least close to the time that we originally promised.
And when that goes live, what sort of period is ramp up until you get to a what you would consider a good production level?
Well, the ramp up is determined by two things. One, the technical ramp up, which would be probably over 12 to 18 months, but the market absorption will take up to 3 years. And so we expect only to see the full financial benefit on an annual basis 3 to 4 years from now.
Plastics business saw revenue up some 8%, particularly agricultural sector. This is exports, as I'm not wrong. It's the packaging. A lot of it is fruits. It's blueberries. It's avos. It's that sort.
That's true. So we have seen good growth in the fruit sector, both in our paper and plastics businesses. And the revenue growth in plastics was really pleasing in a difficult market, but unfortunately that benefit was undermined by some other issues that we had that hopefully we won't have to deal with again, which undermined the profitability overall for the plastics business.
Generally, there's a lot of challenges in the economy. There's a lot of challenges beyond your control. You mentioned load shedding. My sense is that the group seems well positioned. We talked around net debt. We talked around strong cash flow. It's well positioned for an improving environment, but also just for improving conditions internally.
Yes, and we've, I think, invested through the cycle. So, you know, we have a cyclical upturn. We should benefit from that. But even if we don't, we are in sectors which don't need consumer spending growth in South Africa for us to do well. For example, export fruit.
Yeah.
And we're seeing convenience shopping. You know, it's about a change in consumer patterns, not necessarily increased spending. So we make most of the paper that's used for the home delivery bags that you would buy from Checkers 6060 and those kind of companies. And so we've seen tremendous growth of over 30% in those grades in the recent past, and that's been a nice boost to those businesses.
Yeah, and if anything, those sort of trends are only going to continue. Leave it there, Bruce Strong, CEO Impact. Appreciate the time. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Sean Kelly from Parity Wealth Managers. Sean, appreciate the early morning time. You've been crunching some data, looking at US markets versus the rest of the world. I'm imagining numbers are particularly bleak for US. What are the details?
I think, you know, really up until now, America, which makes up around 70% of the global equity market, has been the land of milk and honey for most global investors. But it seems like the investment narrative over the past couple of years, which has been exceptionally driven by AI, is starting to shift. As we know, AI has rewarded investors with a five-year annualized return of around 47%, tripling the broader S&P's 500 performance at 16. But even if we compare the US broader market five-year annualized return of 16% to other regions, we start to get an idea of how much the U.S. has outpaced the rest of the world, such as China delivering only 0.85%, the Japanese Nikkei 4.7%, the UK FTSE 5.7%, SA 7.6%, And Europe, probably the best performing region outside the US, returning 9% over the same 5 years. So I think it was inevitable to expect some cooling off in the US.
Mm-hmm.
And now the once unstoppable, you know, S&P 500 has started the year down 4.5%, while regions like Europe are up 7%, the UK 4%, and the China Hang Seng 21%. So it's starting to becoming a compelling argument for investors to start looking outside the US due to its underperformance.
And that underperformance, I mean, there are, I was chatting with Rekha Nori at the top of the show, I mean, concerns around inflation, concerns around the outcome of tariffs, and truthfully, a whole lot of uncertainty mixed into a market where valuations were, after a couple of really strong years, as per the numbers you just mentioned, valuations are stretched.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for investors, you know, there has been a change in narrative. Price has led to that in valuations. And investors are becoming more cognizant to lofty valuations of U.S. tech stocks and the general U.S. market. Last year, we saw the U.S. was trading at historical premiums compared to regions such as Europe and China, which were trading at historical discounts relative to the rest of the world. And even now, Simon, we still see that the S&P's P/E ratio at 27 times is still much higher than Europe stock, you know, at 17, the UK FTSE at 18, and the Hang Seng at 14. And I think this indicates that there is still a substantial valuation gap, which is putting pressure on US companies, specifically that tech sector, and perhaps opportunities in other regions which had lower expectations to outperform the US are starting to open up. And you know, as your previous caller mentioned, you know, alongside that, there's been a mix of, you know, I suppose, external and internal factors within the US, like job data, tariffs, and radical changes through things like DOGE. This has all contributed to concerns and fears of, you know, stagflation and general uncertainty. And then, of course, positive factors, you know, inside Europe, such as potential ceasefire in Ukraine, the stronger French and German economies and deregulations, along with things like a startup of DeepSeek, have caused markets to reevaluate the U.S. allocations, specifically those in the tech sector.
So in a sense, some less U.S. exposure, and of course the market's partly doing that for you, and maybe for the first time in a long time, to have a good hard look at Europe, which has been a perennial disappointer in terms of performance, perhaps even some China, perhaps even some emerging markets.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, to summarize it up to this point, we're sort of saying that the US has been the ultimate growth story, whilst, you know, perhaps Europe and China has been the ultimate value story. But I think there are still unique elements within the US market. And I think it will take several months or even several quarters of solid returns for global investors to start rotating substantial portions of capital outside the US. You know, we must acknowledge that markets are increasingly driven by exogenous factors such as social media posts from President Trump or Elon Musk and updates from a handful of trillion-dollar companies. So sentiment can shift in a dime. So, you know, as you mentioned earlier, and what we're saying is we're advising our clients to maintain diversified equity baskets to regions and various sectors to capture broadening opportunities.
Yeah, but I like your point there. Europe, perhaps the ultimate value story. And it's not going to happen overnight. This isn't a Tuesday story. This is a story that plays out over time. We'll leave it there. That's Sean Kelly, he's Parity Wealth Managers. Sean, appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Our U.S. markets, I mean, they certainly are selling off. Sean was throwing the numbers there. They've had a spectacular 5 years. But a really, really horrid 2025. We're heading for a bear market. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. Yesterday, I was chatting with Andrew Williams. He, of course, from Schroders, where he runs some of their value funds. We're talking around Trump and tech stocks in particular, and we asked if the U.S. president would be good for the sector over time. Just over 40% said yes, he should be. A third said not a chance, and the rest said maybe eventually. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlab Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30. 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and a review in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again tomorrow. Budget 2.0 review.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.